Welcome to the CannonCast, a weekly podcast from the Cannon, an SB Nation blog covering the Columbus Blue Jackets. I am Old Chase, joined tonight by Eric Seeds, Dale Bloom, and Josh Queeson. What's up, guys?
What's up?
Howdy.
It was a successful sports weekend,
to say the least. The NHL, the Blue Jackets had a very eventful weekend. We're definitely going to dive into that, but did you all have good weekends?
Spent a bunch of money on appliances, and the crew won, so successful weekend over here.
That's good. Yeah, I was in North Carolina, so I was keeping up with the NHL activity and driving back. It's Sunday. We're recording on Sunday, and I was driving back today, but we're doing this big-time podcast. We'll go ahead and jump into that. So we're going to start with the expansion draft, because with all the activity that happened over the weekend, it's almost easy to overlook that, but that was the first of many Blue Jackets and NHL events that happened. So the Seattle Kraken, I think, surprised all of us in taking Gavin Bayreuther from the Blue Jackets. So Max Domi is still with the Blue Jackets for the upcoming season. You know, any other names that we were kind of tossing around, Gavin Bayreuther was probably the least likely of those names that we ever would have thought. And all this was kind of leaking the morning of the expansion draft, so we kind of had an idea as that day drew closer. But yeah, Gavin Bayreuther, Seeds, I don't think you saw that coming, right?
No. I want to shout out Frank Saravelli for, in my mind, since TSN laid him off, he just decided to burn their entire expansion show to the ground by leaking all the picks throughout the day.
So that's why, okay.
Canonically in my head, that's what happened. When the news of Gavin Bayreuther getting picked broke, I legitimately had to check because I thought the account was fake. I did not have that one on my short list of names to be picked. When they left him exposed, I thought for sure Domi was going to be picked, if only because he could have been an asset that Seattle would then flip at the deadline. But it looks like Ron Francis stuck to the plans that were out there, that he was going to go very cheap, preserve cap space, picked a lot of unrestricted free agents, a lot of guys without contracts, a lot of guys who weren't exactly very high on the organizational depth charts. I wish Gavin Bayreuther the best. He looked all right, I guess, in the 9 games he played for Columbus last year. I'll be honest, I don't super remember much of him playing last year. Wish him the best in Seattle. I'm sure he's going to get a 2-way contract when he heads over there. That was very surprising. Of all the names that were available from the Columbus Blue Jackets, which admittedly weren't very many, can't say Bayreuther was very high on my list of people I thought would go. So at least the Columbus didn't lose someone who has trade value this year at the deadline.
Yeah, I was surprised too. I think in hindsight, it's not too terribly surprising given the names that were on the board. I think it was Neil, right? Neil B. on our comments, who was a big contributor in the comment section at the Cannon. He wrote a fan post talking about how he thought that Ron Francis would end up going for AHL depth out of the Blue Jackets, and spelled out some good reasons why. And ultimately, he was right. He nailed it. Bayreuther had 12 points in 14 games in Cleveland last year. So this is a guy that has the ability to dominate in the AHL. He can make a big difference there. So it's a guy that probably wouldn't likely get picked up on waivers. So he gets to spend some time in their AHL program, help the kids out down there in their development program, and then can come up and play in the NHL if they need him to. So I think it makes sense for them, and worked out great for us.
Yeah, I mean, I can honestly say that I forgot about him before I saw his name appear in the tweet. Like Dale said, AHL depth, 2-way contract. He's someone who can, obviously, we saw come up and play some meaningful minutes. And I think he's only 24. So, I mean, he's still got room to grow. He did not look out of place at all in his 9 games. I watched his highlight reel with Columbus. It was pretty much one goal, one fight. So it was short and sweet, but hey, that's a victory, though. He played his part, a.k.a. getting picked up in the expansion draft and not taking anyone off our roster.
Gavin's actually 27.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah, he's actually older than I even realized. I had a look. Yeah, so this means that a guy like Max Domi could come back, hopefully play well, and up his trade value, you would think, for the trade deadline, potentially. We'll see. I think it works out for Columbus that they were able to keep Domi. We'll see how that will go for the upcoming year. But the other big move that we all saw coming was the Blue Jackets trading Seth Jones, the 2021 32nd pick, and the 2022 6th-round pick to Chicago for Adam Boqvist, the 2021 12th overall pick, and the 44th pick, and then a 2022nd first-round pick. Well, first off, were any of you guys surprised that this trade actually went down when it did? I kind of thought draft, big trades happened at the NHL draft, but we didn't know when it was going to happen, and it kind of just came together maybe quickly on Friday. I don't know how much talking there had been. There had been discussions. Then we saw the Seth Jones salary. So I like Seth Jones. We know how good he can be. He's coming off kind of a bad season. So now Chicago's on the hook. And Chicago's kind of a weird rebuilding, retooling situation themselves. Personally, I think Columbus came out ahead, or not, I won't say ahead. I think they came out very well with this trade and what they got, and we'll see what ultimately comes of it. But I'll start with you, Josh. What was your reaction with the Seth Jones trade, his extension with Chicago, etc.?
I mean, once I got my got realistic about it, that we weren't getting DeBrincat or Doc, I came around to the fact knowing that we'd probably get their 12th in this year, and Bokvist had to be the one to come back and, you know, hopefully eat some minutes on defense. The 12th pick looks a lot better now knowing who we got with it, because I think we're all pretty excited about Sillinger coming in. And the next year's pick, honestly, that one is such a wild card in my opinion. I mean, Toews is coming back, so they're going to have their offense is going to be pretty stacked this year. But I have no idea what's going to go on with the investigation that's going on there. So, I mean, depending on everything that goes down, it could potentially implode in Chicago, and that 2022 pick is going to look really nice. And then flipping that second rounder for Bean right there, that was such a underrated move. Bean, I think he was a 13th overall pick in 2018. So that's just adding more solid depth to the lineup with a lot of room to improve. So, I mean, yeah, we didn't get the big sexiest names out there, but definitely a quality return for a player who pretty much had two destinations that Yarmo had to work with.
Yeah, he was a 13th in 2016, but very close.
Yeah, I think going into the weekend, initially I was kind of a pessimist on what was going to happen. I thought that Yarmo would hold on and maybe after the draft was when the Jones trade would go down. But right before the draft on Friday evening, there were a lot of trades that went down. Ekman-Larsson trade. What else went down? I know there were a couple other trades too. But I think rolling into that last hour, and then there became some rumblings, and it just kind of felt like it was going to happen. I think Porty had tweeted out that the Blue Jackets were interested in Sillinger. And from there, it just kind of all made sense. And man, in hindsight, I don't know if you guys saw the LeBrun article today on The Athletic, but pretty much talking about how Seth Jones wanted to go to Chicago. The Stars weren't that involved with the trade talks, and Colorado pretty much only wanted him for a one-year rental. And those were pretty much the only teams that Jones was wanting to sign long-term for. And man, Yarmo got a haul for basically what Chicago, you know, probably could have waited a year for and signed him in UFA. So hats off to Yarmo. I think that the return that he got shocked everybody. And I think that we should be very happy with what we got.
I want to give special shout out to Philly general manager Chuck Fletcher for way overpaying for Rasmus Ristolainen and upping Seth Jones's trade value. Good job there. Thank you to the Philadelphia Flyers for continuing to do weird things. It really helped Columbus out this weekend. Yarmo absolutely did an excellent job with the Seth Jones trade. I was incredibly over the moon that he was able to get so much value for a player who was not signing here and who had one foot out the door. And this situation had to resolve itself probably this weekend, because you just couldn't let this linger going forward, especially with the way this organization needs to turn the next page and turn over a new leaf. When we initially were reported to get the 12th overall pick, my hope and prayer was that Sillinger was there and we could take him. When that came to pass, it made the trade look a whole lot better, because we not only moved up in the first round and got the player we wanted, we got a blue chip center prospect, a blue chip defensive prospect, and a 2022 first rounder, along with a second that we were immediately flipped for another defensive prospect, a pretty good young player in Jake Bean, all in the span of about 3 hours. And that's some incredible GM work by Yarmo. That was really well done. I was very pleased with the Seth Jones trade. I'm not heartbroken about it. Given all the high profile leavings in the direction of the club. I'd kind of made my peace with the fact that Jones was leaving over the last year and a half. I'd kind of just made my peace with it. Like, Jones isn't going to want to be here. I might as well just accept the fact that he's not staying. And when we were able to get that good of a haul for a player who wasn't committing here long-term, I mean, that's excellent GM work by Yarmo. He did a wonderful job with that trade.
The Seth Jones, I'll just read the numbers. 8 years, $76 million. The signing bonus is $40,250,000. The average salary is $9.5 million.
Also, really glad we don't have to pay this.
2029, 2030 will be his last season. So he'll be a UFA in 2030. If you could wrap your head around that, those numbers, it just sounds futuristic. Like, that's when cars should be flying.
imagine paying Seth Jones more than Cale Makar.
Yeah, I mean, good for Jones, but yeah, I think this... Honestly, we see this all the time. Big time players get paid, and then how often do their deals just look horrible? And this is a Chicago team, like I said. It's not like we're talking about a team that's a Stanley Cup contender that could win anytime. They're probably not more than a...
Missed the playoffs last year.
Yeah, they're not a great team. So it's kind of a weird situation. And then, like you said, Josh, that investigation that's going on, that whole ugly incident. So lots to still fall out from there. But that's done. You already alluded to it, but that 44th pick in the draft that was involved in the Seth Jones trade was then flipped to Carolina for Jake Bean. A deal, like I think you guys already mentioned, it's kind of under the radar now, but that should be a nice pickup for Columbus as well. While I'm thinking about it with Carolina, Dale, Carolina traded their goalie, Alex Nedeljkovic, to Detroit on Thursday.
Yeah, it's a crazy kind of turn of events, too, in Carolina, you know, for a team that needed a goaltender. And they didn't have bad goaltending by any means, but they kind of need that elite goaltending to get over that hump they're currently at. For them to trade a guy like that was kind of questionable to me. But I don't know much about Jake Bean. I think that he can quarterback a power play unit. He's a lock for a top six, probably a future top four guy. So yeah, really good pickup by Yarmo. I think in hindsight, if we have lots of years of Adam Boqvist and Jake Bean and Sillinger turns out to be a top six center, I think that we're going to look back on that Jones trade and be very, very happy with what came out of that. And hopefully Jake Bean is a big part of that.
Yeah, for sure. And now we're going to move on to the last big trade before we get to the draft itself. This really came out of nowhere, I think. The Blue Jackets trading Cam Atkinson to Philadelphia to bring back Jakub Voracek helps Columbus get to the cap floor, bringing in that Voracek deal. Voracek has one less year on his deal than Cam does, making a little bit more annual average value. But I don't think any of you guys are. Well, first of all, I know Cam Atkinson was a loyal, in the community. Everybody loved him. But from a hockey trade standpoint, how do you guys like bringing in a guy like Voracek, and even in terms of what you might lose with Cam not being there anymore?
So I was on the treadmill when this news started happening the other Saturday morning. I was literally running on the treadmill, and because of the weekend, I had push notifications from Elliot Friedman on Twitter, like, just so my watch buzzed, and it's like, and I'm trying to run on the treadmill, and I get this notification, and I'm running like, Columbus engaged in talks with trading Cam Atkinson to Philadelphia for Jake Voracek, and I literally like jumped on the treadmill like, what am I reading right now? So I jumped off the treadmill, and it sucks. Okay, full disclosure, anyone who reads me, listens to me, knows I've never been Cam's biggest fan on the ice. I've always thought he was more of a finishing guy who was line mate dependent, and dependent on someone far more skilled than him to create space for him to finish and score goals. He was a good finisher. He was not a good driver of play or creator. Terrific penalty killer. I will not take that away from him. I guess it mostly caught me off guard because he was at the arena Friday night signing autographs. Like, this obviously came together very quickly. It's been rumored and reported that Philadelphia really wanted to shake up the veteran core of their room. Jake Voracek's been there 10 years, played 700-some games for him. They're obviously not trading Claude Giroux, probably not Sean Couturier, so Voracek's probably the next most likely guy on that roster to get traded if you want to shake up the core. I'm trading for a veteran who is known for scoring goals, when and you can put him on a line with a guy like Giroux. That just kind of makes sense. Philly saves money cap hit wise if they want to upgrade their backup goaltending situation, if they want to, I don't know, find the money to pay Rasmus Ristolainen for whatever reason they traded for him. It sucks from an off-ice perspective because Cam was a, you know, I'm not real big on the whole loyalty thing. I'm not, I think that's total nonsense. I don't really subscribe to the idea that loyalty is what wins championships. I think talent wins championships, but Cam was so clearly invested in this city, and it does suck to lose a guy like that, a guy who had made a family here, a guy who was at his son's birthday party when they called to tell him he was traded. So I do wish Cam the best in Philadelphia, but I'm not overly heartbroken that he's gone from an on-ice perspective.
He was a guy that could always knock in a shorthanded goal pretty often, so I will miss that. I won't lie. Amongst some other things, for sure, but Josh, what'd you think? I know you weren't really a huge fan of this trade, right?
At first, like, sentimentality aside, I'm actually all for it. It's not going to be quite to the point, but I honestly can see this going the same way that the Hartnell-Umberger trade went. Cam has been trending down a little bit the last few years. He was big on proving that he was not reliant on Artemi Panarin, and since he's been gone, it's steadily gone down. Voracek was still on a 60-something point pace last year. It actually blew my mind to realize that although they're close in age, Voracek is actually a little bit younger than Cam. But yeah, I mean, shaking up the core in Philly, I think it was pretty much the same thing here to shake up that old core. I mean, we've gotten rid of pretty much all of it except for Jenner at this point. And Dale, you had alluded to it earlier, but I agree that I think that it could have been, Cam may have been that person on the inside of the room that Portsline has alluded to, that has been the one who may want Line A, prefer him gone. And it's our theory. I don't want to lump you into it if you don't fully subscribe to it, but I do think that they chose the 23-year-old goal scorer rather than the 32-year-old goal scorer.
You can lump me into that. I agree.
Dale, before I get to you, I do wonder if there were any issues or whatever you want to call it with a guy like Line A, who has a ton still to do and prove, and we've seen what he has done. But well, Dale, first you can chime in on the Atkinson aspect, but talking about Line A, I do also wonder if you think that there's any, I don't know, do you think that he could be a disruption or a locker room whatever, or is that why these guys are kind of leaving too, that, you know, they're like paving the way for him and the rest of this roster to you know, take over, march forward.
Yeah, so I was listening to the 31 Thoughts podcast with Elliot Friedman this morning, and his theory, I think, sounds like a good one, and it's that Columbus is looking at a rebuild, and we just traded Foligno and Savard and Jones, and Yarmo's perspective on it might be that, hey, if we're ripping off the Band-Aid, we might as well just go all in. Let's rip off the Band-Aid now. Let's get these guys out of here. Let's help the fan base adjust quickly and then move on. But I do wonder, you know, Portsline had reported that there was a big leadership meeting after the season had ended this summer. And one of the biggest gripes was that there was a big disconnect between the front office and the core leadership group. Which included Jones and Atkinson and Foligno. Oh, I guess not Foligno at this point, but you can assume that there is still a lot of Foligno and Savard influence in there. And then there's also the rumors about Patrick Laine and some of the players in the room not getting along with him too well, I guess. Who knows about off the ice, but probably more of on the ice. So you wonder if that is definitely a part of this. But having said all that, I think that this is a really tough trade for the fan base. I know there's a lot of people on Twitter that are upset about it. And it's hard to lose a guy like that. I got a picture a couple months ago, a signed Cam Atkinson picture, and it's sitting on my 7-year-old's wall right now. So, you know, it's a tough thing for the fan base. But hockey-wise, I think that we got the better player for sure. they've said that they want to surround Line A with the best guys. Voracek is an elite playmaker in this league. I think he's currently something like 17th on the list on most assists in his career. And just like Josh was saying, too, I actually pulled up the numbers here before we started because I wanted to see kind of where these guys are trending. And if you look over the last 5 years, so Atkinson starting in 16-17, his points per game over an 82-game season, because the last couple of years have been strange. So it's 62, 58, 71. That's the Panarin beating the Lightning year. 48 and then 50 the last 2 years. If you look at Voracek, he's a lot more consistent with a higher ceiling. He's 61, 85, 69, 67, 67. So I think kind of what this signals is that, hey, we're ripping the Band-Aid off. This is a rebuild. But at the same time, I think they do want to compete at a certain level while they're in this rebuild. They want to put butts in the seats. So I think Voracek is a guy that can kind of elevate this offense to a different level.
Yeah, I agree. I think Voracek is very helpful. He's a playmaker, very nice passer, very nice setup man. Last year he had something like 43 assists or somewhere in that neighborhood, 53 points over, or he was on a 66-point pace over the course of the season. But Dale, you did touch on one important point that I forgot to mention, that this is a tough trade for the fan base, and I do feel for people. You know, I talked to Fearless Leader Pale Dragon a lot over the weekend because, you know, he took this pretty hard. My girlfriend, she took this pretty hard. Cam Atkinson was her favorite Blue Jacket, and to lose him, she's been pretty bummed the last couple of days just because he's been such a leader in the community. He's always been a visible face, always someone who's out there and advocating on behalf of the organization. Nationally, he's been in, you know, national ad campaigns on behalf of the franchise. So, you know, I do understand where the fan base is coming from, where they're taking this one pretty hard, because Cam is a guy who, for whatever he was or where he was regressing to on the ice, he gave a damn about the town. And that's not nothing for a team that has had trouble keeping guys here, that has had trouble with players who are drafted here wanting to stay here, players who are traded here wanting to stay here, people embracing the town. Like, embracing the town and the organization isn't nothing. And I do want to commend Cam Atkinson for that and acknowledge that loss from that perspective.
You know, I said this, but I wrote that article, that was like a month or two ago, our Jackets 20 article about Cam Atkinson calling him Columbus's golden boy. And I was, as I was writing that article, talking about how we expected him to beat some Rick Nash records and how he was going to go, his legacy was going to go down in Columbus. And I'm thinking as I'm writing this, he's totally getting traded this summer.
He just tweeted like a couple days ago. He was like, Columbus is, I'm paraphrasing, it was like, Columbus is home for me and my family. And then sure enough, he gets traded. He's a great guy in the community. And of course, I'm not in Columbus, so I don't see it as often as everybody else. Or at least I know what he's doing without necessarily being there to really experience it. So for me, it's like, I have to remember, like, I'm not as sentimental because I'm not also there, or I'm just thinking about the wins and the on ice presence and not the entire package. So I definitely understand from the local community aspect of what else he brings outside of just on the ice. But I hope he's able to have success in Philadelphia, not against Columbus, but, you know, I hope that he can, because we were talking about how he's kind of maybe lacked production on the ice in recent years. So hopefully he finds his game in Philly, but also hopefully Voracek can help get this line going, because we know the offense needs it. So the last major piece of this pod is the NHL draft itself. I'm going to run through the names real fast. Hopefully I get some of these names right. But starting with their first pick, the fifth overall draft pick out of Michigan, amongst a lot of Michigan players to go, was Kent Johnson, a center. Of course, like you mentioned, Mike Sillinger's son, the former Blue Jacket, and his son Cole Sillinger being drafted 12th overall. Corson Coleman's. Not sure if I'm saying that right. A defenseman with the 25th pick. Stanislav Svozil. Do you know if that name is right?
Sounds right.
Got Ben Boyd coming up, so you're good.
Stanislav, and then it's getting harder as we go. Guillaume? I don't even know. Do you guys know how to say their fourth?
Richard. You can go
with the last Richard.
Yeah, it looks like, I don't even want to butcher the first name. Richard, there Nikolai Makarov, Nikolai. We're going to know these names ideally once they come up and hopefully play well in Columbus. James Malatesta in the fifth round, Ben Boyd in the sixth round, Martin, it looks like Raisavi, it's probably not right at all. And then basically, I thought it was notable to say that Corey Pronman from The Athletic gave their draft an A-, which is great. So we can dive deeper into this draft, but I'm just curious to get your guys' thoughts based on maybe the draft score, and we won't know obviously for a couple of years at least, but could this be their best draft they've had, or at least on paper? Could it be their best draft?
Night of the first round, it's the most excited I think I've ever been. So, or at least since like Rick Nash. So congrats to them.
Yeah, I mean, they took what could have been, a downer night, losing one of your staples that you've had on your team for the last 6 years. They did a 180. They flipped it around, and there was so much buzz. Everyone's consensus was it was a great night for the team in the city. It definitely was one of the most momentous nights in terms of setting the future in line, because they swung for the fences with the Kent Johnson pick. I didn't see it coming, to be honest. I don't think many people did. He was kind of hovering around like the 8 to 10 mark, but obviously it was all a crapshoot. But to grab the player with the most skill in the draft, isn't that what we've been needing for years?
Ever?
Yeah, I mean,
ever.
His comparables, which I know is still also like years out, but comparables I saw was Johnny Gaudreau and William Nylander. So
that'll play.
Yeah, sign me up if he can.
Yeah. Subscribe.
Retweet.
And Ben Boyd can just beat the crap out of people, apparently.
I still would like to know if they would have picked McTavish if he was there at that slot. I tend to think that they would have. But he ended up going third to Anaheim. But I think I was kind of neutral about Kent Johnson. I was just glad at that point. I was glad it wasn't Edvinson. Nothing against Edvinson,
same.
But I'd have been pretty upset if they picked a defenseman over someone like Kent Johnson or William Eklund. And we'll see how that pans out. But I know a couple people have commented on this, and I think that the Cole Sillinger pick kind of makes the Kent Johnson pick a little bit more palatable. Just because you've got two top center prospects now, both project to be in the top six. So if they both make it in the top six, maybe Ken Johnson doesn't end up being a center. There's some questions about that. And maybe Cole Sillinger does. And that softens that blow quite a bit. But there was a lot of buzz around Cole Sillinger leading up to the draft. I forget who it was. I want to say it was Scott Wheeler from The Athletic, but I could be wrong about that, saying that he wouldn't have been surprised if Cole Sillinger had ended up getting picked in the top nine. So there was a chance that this guy was going to go before number 12, and he didn't. I think him playing in the USHL last year probably hurt his stock a little bit, being a little bit lesser of a league. But I think this guy's probably going to go into the WHL next year and tear it up. And I'm just super excited about this kid. He has a nasty shot. He's a brute. His motor is always at 1,000. So I think he's going to be a star in the league. And I think him falling to 12 is great for us. But overall, A+ in this draft. I'm excited about a lot of these guys. Even a guy like Svozil. This is a guy that was in the top 100 in several rankings. And he falls to the third round and gets picked up. So just pretty happy about that. Or sorry, no, Spoville was projected as a first rounder in several rankings and fell. Martin Raisavi in the round 7, he was projected as a top 100 in some rankings, and we picked him up in the 7th round. So you know Yarmo loves his 7th round picks. Shout out to Marcus Nudavara on that one.
Yeah, I was in the arena for the first round of the draft. I went to the Blue Jackets draft party, and it was a pretty cool environment. Everyone seemed very excited by the Kent Johnson pick. I have to imagine there was a lot of groaning in the arena when McTavish went at 3. Like, I think a lot of people were hoping Columbus got McTavish, myself included. I wanted McTavish really badly. So when they didn't get him, I was just hoping, nothing against Simon Edvinson, but this team needs so much help at center through the pipeline. So when they swung for Kent Johnson, there was a report, I think Aaron Portsline wrote, that he was adamant in interviews with the team that, I'm a center. I want to play center in the NHL level. The only reason he didn't is because he was a freshman on a loaded Michigan team last year. And if he thinks he can be a center at the NHL, it sounds like the Blue Jackets are willing to give him a shot in development. So, but the kid is undeniably talented, undeniably skilled, and is a offensive wizard playmaker. And God knows this organization needs more of that. It needs a lot more of that. Getting Cole Sellinger was icing on the cake once they got the 12th pick. Like, he is, I am so high on that kid. He is basically PLD light. He's a brute with a better shot, and he is going to be a horse when he gets to the NHL. I'm over the moon excited that we got him. And then we got a blue chip defensive prospect, 24th overall. So, like, I don't know how you can't rank this draft as anything but an A+. Like, that, it was incredibly well done by the Blue Jackets.
Yeah, really cool that I remember seeing Mike Sellinger play. Now his son will be in Columbus. I mean, assuming, of course, he makes it up there and all that. But also, I'm seeing that Brian Hedger tweeted that it sounds like Patrick Laine will sign his qualifying offer of $7.5 million probably this week. It also sounds like they're probably going to keep both of Elvis Merzlikins and Jonas Korpisalo after, of course, the news with Matthias Kivlenix. And so it sounds like probably both goalies will be on the roster. Do you foresee any, besides Laine signing his deal, at least for the upcoming season, do you guys foresee any other? I'm sure little depth signings might happen, but I wouldn't expect anything big to happen at this point.
The only move that I could see possibly is a veteran defenseman could play lower in the lineup. I mean, we do have still a fair amount of guys who compete for that last spot. But I mean, do we really need to see Scott Harrington for another year? Who is it? Clendenning, Gabe Carlson. I'd prefer him over anybody at this point, but it's really young defense right now. And I can see them adding somebody on the back end. I think I've heard their name linked to Sammy Vatanen, which I think he could be a steadying presence back there. I'm not sure in terms of leadership, but as of right now, we have a pretty young back end.
Yeah, I thought that they were going to re-sign Michael Delzato, but at this point they haven't re-signed him, so I'm wondering if they're even going to at all. And then Mikko Lehtinen, I don't know. I mean, they've had their chance to sign them since Friday, right? And they haven't, so those guys might hit free agency.
Yeah, I don't really foresee any huge moves, depth signings here and there maybe, but yeah, I'm trying to write the forward preview, and it's like there's no one really we're going to sign, guys. Like, let's just be real.
Yeah. Well, at least they have Bjorkstrand, Laine, Voracek. Maybe we'll see some offense for a change, at least with those three guys. I don't know if that's going to be the line.
I still think that if they can figure out the center position, and I don't mean having a true 1C in there, a guy that would be considered a 1C by any stretch of the imagination. But this team made the playoffs with Brandon Dubinsky as their 1C. You're talking about a 40 to 50 point player. So if somebody like Domi or Rossvik can figure out the defensive side, bringing in a guy like Voracek, the defense can play a little bit better as a group. And then you got a guy like Elvis with the potential of standing on his head back there. I'm not saying this is going to be a playoff team next year, but they may not be bottom of the barrel, and they may end up being a little bit better off than they were last season. But we'll see. I think that the moves this weekend do point towards rebuild.
They'll be more fun to watch at the very least.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Is Zach Werenski your captain?
No, not until he signs.
I'm assuming no C. I'm assuming just a vacancy this upcoming season. Unless it's like Bjorkstrand or something.
No, I think they'll leave it.
Yeah, unless they feel like Bjorkstrand can do it, I would agree.
Honestly, I'm not against that at all. I mean, they played well without a captain a few years ago. I don't know. Let the team just fight it out, and we'll see how everything develops, and hopefully hopefully players do develop under the coaching staff, the minors, everything else. But I think we covered everything. Is there anything that you guys wanted to mention that we didn't get to?
I have a final thought.
I do too, then. I'm just going to say it real fast. So quick final thought. I finally watched Ted Lasso. It is great. I'm sure. Have you guys been watching that at all? You have, Seeds? Yeah. It's been good.
It's so good. So. It's the most wholesome, heartwarming show ever.
Exactly. Everybody says that. It's true. I finally caught up and watched it. And I'm also excited about the Blue Jackets. I was pretty down on them. I think we all were at some point. But I'm actually excited for opening night now. So anyway, that's all I've got.
Yeah, my final thought is I want to give a shout out to Matt Calvert. He retired due to a back injury, had surgery recently that was career ending. Spent 8 years in Columbus, 2 years in Colorado. He scored the first ever playoff game winning goal for the Blue Jackets when they beat Pittsburgh. He gave it all on the ice for this club. You know, we all remember when he came back with the baseball seam stitched into his face against the Rangers. Shout out to a guy who was never super talented, but worked his ass off on a nightly basis. So best of luck in retirement to Matt, and hope to see him at a game here in the future.
Absolutely. Love Matty Calvert. He was always one of my favorite players. Does own one or two Blue Jackets hat tricks. So a guy that did have a lot of talent coming into the NHL, ended up being kind of a fourth line grinding kind of guy, but a legend in my book.
Yeah, for being a bottom six forward, how many all-time Blue Jacket moments does he hold? First overtime goal,
Rick Nash
in his first game. Yep. That one-handed goal, overtime goal against the Bruins.
Yeah.
Can't remember who that was against, but yeah, that was a nasty goal. But yeah, respect for a long career.
Yeah, so shout out Matt Calvert.
I saw his two-goal playoff game in D.C., unfortunately an overtime loss, but still fun to see him score a couple goals in the playoffs. So that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the Cannon Cast. Be sure to check us out at CBJ Cannon on Twitter and Facebook at jacketscannon.com. We'll have a lot more content coming up this week, and we'll see you all next week. Subscribe to the Cannon Cast on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you can catch every episode. Leave us a review and a rating, and as always, we welcome your thoughts and feedback. Go to jacketscannon.com for more Blue Jackets coverage from us, and follow us on Twitter at CBJCannon. Our theme music is the song Green Eyes by Angela Pirelli and the Howling Moons. Check out angelapirelli.com for more music and show dates.